Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoeffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. We gratefully acknowledge contributions to sustain the Infrastructure Show from Dr. Robert Peskin, Dr. Raymond Ellis, and Andrea and Ron DeFeo. In 1979, a nuclear reactor at the Three Mile Island power plant near Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, suffered a partial meltdown and was decommissioned. A second reactor continued to operate until 2019 and was mothballed for economic reasons. Now, after nearly 50 years, the second unit is to be restarted to produce electric power for a sole customer, Microsoft. To understand what it takes to restart and ensure the safety of a nuclear power plant, we've invited back Dr. Elmer Lewis, who's Professor Emeritus of Mechanical Engineering at Northwestern University. Dr. Lewis is the author of the books Nuclear Power Reactor Safety and Fundamentals of Nuclear Reactor Physics, and he will soon add his newest book, Renewables or Nuclear, Which Should Lead in Curbing Climate Change. Elmer, thanks very much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Normally, what would have been done to preserve the Three Mile Island facilities and ensure their safety over many years?
Mainly, it's what's called mothballing. It's drain the thing of fluids, do whatever needs to be done, so that the main thing is not to do anything that's irreversible so that it could be started up again.
So the presumption is they mothballed it on the expectation that they would at some point or might at some point bring it back online.
That I don't know what their intentions were. I assume there was a hope because there was a problem is that reactors could not compete with very cheap prices of natural gas and also the advent of solar and wind energy coming in. And so many of them were shut down for, not many, but several were shut down for that reason. But in some states, there were subsidies put in order not to lose all the carbon-free power that we were getting from reactors. But the Three Mile Island reactor was shut down because there was no subsidy in Pennsylvania at the time.
So now the current owner, Constellation Energy, plans to restart this mothballed nuclear generator. What does it take to do this? Is it more than a matter of flipping a switch and turning it on?
Oh, yes. In fact, I think it can be done, but their timeline is very aggressive. 3 years doesn't sound like very long to me. I imagine they've already done a fairly thorough inspection of the reactor, because you can sort of divide it into two parts. One is the thermal hydraulic equipment, the pressure vessels, pumps, steam generators, that sort of thing, haven't changed that much since the reactor was built. And so the main thing is they have to inspect them to make sure there isn't so much corrosion or other deterioration that they would have to replace major components. The much more difficult thing is anything having to do with electronics. Maybe you saw the PBS segment on Three Mile Island 1, which showed they were talking to somebody in its control room, which is mainly a collection of strip charts, dials, and all sorts of other things, where now a new control room would be all flat screen panels. So they're going to have to completely rip out all of that, and it goes further than just the control room, because the relays would all over the reactor and sensors would be replaced with modern electronic equipment, and that's a major undertaking.
So presumably all that equipment is available. It's off-the-shelf kinds of products?
That's a good question. I think the pieces of it, I think, would be largely available because they're used in control rooms at chemical plants and all sorts of other things that have been built more recently. But the timing, again, is because even if they could rehire operators from, say, other plants, they wouldn't be used to using that modern equipment. So one of the big tasks is they've got to design and set up what's called a control room simulator, and then train new operators on that control room simulator. And we're talking about months to years to do that. They have to recruit the people with the back, you know, proper backgrounds and everything after that.
So the way you're describing it, it sounds like those specialists are not readily available on the market.
No, that's been a huge problem with the nuclear industry. We haven't built any reactors in so many years. The experienced people who, even with the older ones, have mainly retired by now.
So are those people typically college educated, or are they more kind of at the technician level?
Probably halfway in between. Probably, you know, a trade school, but they would have to be very bright because the systems are pretty complicated. But no, you don't need calculus to be a operator of a reactor.
I just wonder, are you seeing any particular risks associated with restarting of what amounts to a half-century-old nuclear plant?
Safety risks, not really. I think the risks are more in getting it through the licensing process, because they've got to re-license it, which is a very thorough procedure. And one of the unknowns is they will have to have public hearings, and particularly since the other reactor on that site was the Three Mile Island accident, the local community has lots of reservations, and there could well be lawsuits or other things that would really drag out the whole process.
So the plant that suffered the meltdown was decommissioned. What does decommissioned mean?
It means there's no attempt to preserve stuff so that it could ever go back into operation. And in fact, it means eventually they'll tear the whole thing down, dispose of the radioactive material that's in the melted down core. And in fact, that's just been initiated recently. So there's going to be lots of activity on that site, because at the same time they're trying to restart one reactor, there'll be other crews taking the other one down and disposing of its contents.
So where do we stand right now in the United States in terms of disposing of spent nuclear materials?
It's a political football between state and federal government. There was a plan, and the site was built at Yucca Flats in Nevada for underground storage. But for political reasons, it was abandoned, and they're having problems deciding where to put it. So at present, the waste, which is really just spent fuel, is being stored on site in large concrete and steel containers, and it's perfectly safe there for, you know, decades, centuries. So it's not a technical problem. It's a political problem of finding some place that'll agree to take it and store it permanently.
So you referred to this before, but it sounds like there's a reasonable possibility that there will be some local pushback on the restart.
I hope not, but I wouldn't be surprised if there were.
Since Three Mile Island was built originally, have there been technological advancements in the, not just the control system, but in the generation of nuclear power that might lead to some kind of a change in technology?
Well, I guess the major thing is the couple of more recent reactors that have been built, the two in Georgia that went into operation just this last year. The primary thing is instead of relying on pumps and valves to get the removal of the decay heat, if there's an accident and the reactor's been shut down but it's still generating decay heat, they've gone completely to systems that work on natural convection. So if, unlike at Fukushima, where the emergency generators were flooded and that meant there was no safety system, with these, the safety systems would operate even without any external power at all. So that's a major change since the Three Mile Island plant was built.
If in the restart they were going to think about introducing that kind of a change, it sounds like that would be a total rebuild.
Yeah, I think that would make it a financial impossibility.
What's the state of the Georgia plant? Is it completed and operating or in progress?
There were actually two of them. They're completed and operating, but they came in way over budget and with terrific time delays from when they were supposed to go up. But I think, you know, and actually the cost of reactors is used as one of the arguments against nuclear power. But I think we've learned from the mistakes that happened there, and we know that that same reactor design has been constructed in budget and on time in Korea. So it's not the technology itself, but the fact that the state of the industry in the U.S., with most of the people who knew anything about it having retired and so on, where Korea has been building reactors periodically during that time span.
Yeah, so the knowledge is continuous and refreshed in terms of the skills of the people that are doing the work.
Yeah, and it's not so much the theory. It's the that you have tradesmen, for example, that are used to the very high standards of welding on nuclear plants as opposed to, say, chemical or other types of industrial installations.
I want to take you back just for a moment to the restart issues. What is the characteristic of the current facility in terms of inspectability? That is, can they do a really good job of inspecting the condition?
Oh, yeah. The levels of radioactivity, you know, with the, how long has it been shut down? 6 years, I think. No, 9 years it's been shut down. So they're very well. I mean, so people can go in and, you know, walk around inside the, well, not sure inside the pressure vessel at this point. And I'm not sure the fuel has to be removed and stored, because I think it's questionable. It's possible that some of the fuel could be left in the reactor when it's started up, but that'll depend on what sort of condition it's in, whether they need to take it out and store it, or they can use the fuel that's already in the core.
So overall, how would you describe the state of the nuclear power industry in the United States right now? And I'm interested, you did a bit of a comparison with South Korea. How do we stand in relative to what's going on in the rest of the world?
Well, it's been pretty dormant, but just within the last year, there's been a tremendous shift, or the last few years, on a number of fronts, particularly with the idea of modular and advanced reactors that are in the process. And also, one of the big hindrances to building new reactors has been the way that, with deregulation, the wholesale electricity markets are structured, with no financial incentives whatever for building new reactors, where under the old vertically integrated utilities, where the same firm owned the reactors, the transmission, and the distribution system, there was long-term planning, but there's been none of that with the deregulated. And in the parts of the country, which amount to about two-thirds of the total electricity use where these markets exist, there's been no there haven't been any reactors built because there's just no financial reason to do it.
So does the push for artificial intelligence and large-scale and high-speed computing, is that, do you see that changing the nature of the markets and the industry?
Very much so. And, well, and in fact, as you know, one of the reasons that refurbishing Three Mile Island won is that Microsoft has made a power purchase agreement to purchase the power at a fixed price for 20 years, all of the output of the reactor, in fact. So that gives them the the ability to finance the rebuilding of the reactor. And that's becoming more the same thing is being done. The Palisades reactor on the shore of Lake Michigan is being refurbished, and it's recently been announced that I think it's Meta is doing the same thing. It's one of these power purchase agreements for 20 years for the power from that reactor. There's talk about a reactor in Iowa, the Duane, I think is what it's called. It's a smaller 600-megawatt reactor. That there's also talk of somebody making a power purchase arrangement for 20 years if they restart it. And just this morning before we came on, I was reading that Meta is also signing one of those arrangements with the Clinton reactor, which is actually an operating reactor in central Illinois, to buy its power for the next 20 years. So this has been a big push from the people who are needing the power for AI, because they're finding that they can't afford to rely on wind or solar energy because it's intermittency where they can get reliable 24/7 full power from the reactors.
So that brings up what I think is a broader question, that is, how do you see nuclear fitting into an integrated package of energy sources, particularly a package that includes these variable renewables like wind and solar?
Well, I've got nearly 70,000 words on the topic, but it's complicated. I my own feeling, and I'm revealing part of the conclusion of the book here, is that nuclear is going to have to play a large role, because otherwise they're both the two things you actually have to have an electric grid, and that's stability and balance. Balance meaning that supply is always exactly equal to demand. And with large parts of wind and solar, you can have problems with both of those. With the stability problem, it's increasingly looking like the blackout in Spain last April was due to instabilities in the grid, which was operating with more than 70% wind and solar energy at the time. So I think for that reason, and also the real Achilles heel of what the DOE calls variable renewable energy, is something called dark doldrums, where there are days long or even weeks of overcast skies and calm winds, where you lose all but a tiny percentage of the wind and solar. So you have to have the backup plants there anyway. And if you're going to have to build the backup plants, it makes no sense to be paying for something that you're only going to be using on rare occasions.
So you see nuclear playing a bigger role in the future?
Yeah, I definitely do. And I think we're all, there's a major shift right now in a lot of countries that decided to shut down all their nuclear plants after the Fukushima accidents. They're in states too, in Illinois, for example, and others. And in Germany, for example, they're now deciding they will build reactors after all, where they've been banned for several years. And some of the other European countries as well.
It sounds to me like, from what you just said, the newer technologies give you some real protection against the kinds of failures that happened in Fukushima, which in a sense, given the location of that plant, was a rare instance in itself.
Yeah, and I have the feeling if there are any major accidents, and Fukushima is the only major one we've had in an industrialized democracy, as opposed to the Chernobyl situation, is they'll probably be the side effects of natural disasters, whether it be a volcano or an earthquake or a tsunami, where the loss of life due to the natural disaster makes the reactor accident look insignificant. For example, with Fukushima, they've now concluded that even if they had not evacuated people, that no member of the public would have received a dangerous level of radiation. There's a threshold below that, you know, regulations allow. And so, but by the fact that there's such a fear of radiation, they evacuated all those people out of nursing homes and hospitals. The more recent counts that over 1,000 people died because of the evacuations. And, you know, they were taken off their meds and all sorts of other problems, where if they had just sheltered in place, there would have been much less severe. So it's a case, if you overcompensate for one risk, you can be creating another as a result of it.
Yeah, it really wasn't the radiation risk that killed people.
No, not at all. In fact, the only three operators that were killed, two of them drowned and another one was hit by a falling beam.
It's a lesson that says useful to understand exactly what happened so that we can prepare for and plan for the future.
Right, okay. Right.
Well, thank you very much for giving us these insights. It prepares us a little bit better to read what goes on in the news and track these changes in the nuclear industry. And we look forward to that next book coming out. So we wish you well for that.
Okay. Thank you, and my pleasure.
Glad to talk to you, Elmer. Take care. Bye. Thanks for listening to The Infrastructure Show. If you enjoyed the conversation as much as we did, please subscribe to our podcast and encourage your friends to join us too. The Infrastructure Show is recorded at the Studio Media Recording Company in Evanston, Illinois, under the direction of Scott Steinman, recording engineer with a commitment to great sound. Our producer is Marion Sowers, a journalist with a passion for infrastructure. And I am Professor Joseph Schoeffer. Few people are more curious about infrastructure than I am.